Innovation, disruption, and big issues. This is Business Game Changers with Sarah Westall.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. Today we are going to talk about the mass media and the alternative media and how the mass media is affected by the pressures and the powers that be. They are very influenced by where their money's coming from. Everybody's influenced by where their money's coming from and who's providing you the means of survival, who's paying your bills. And so those groups that are paying their bills are the ones that get their agenda out. And if they don't want the truth out, the truth doesn't come out. They can't put bad things out about pharmaceutical companies. They can't put bad things out about war and the military. They really can't do a lot of things. So the mass media has really been set up to fail in a lot of ways now that the alternative media is coming on board. And they're also kind of a dinosaur. They don't know how to compete against a more nimble, open-minded group of people that just, they're entrepreneurs against a bureaucracy. And so it's, you know, we're seeing the classic business dynamics. Plus, they have a lot of power structures that are on their case pushing agendas. And the alternative media, well, they do too, but they have, but they are independent. And so they can go and dive into different things. And so that's what we're going to talk about. I have Daniel Linst back on, dark journalist. And we're going to talk about the memes that are going on in the media and how there are nefarious characters that go in and mess around with the narrative for their own purposes. And it's much easier to do that in the alternative media because they don't have resources. And so you have to be careful who you listen to. We know the mass media is really influenced and it's very difficult to trust a lot of what they're putting out. But even if what they're putting out is truthful, it's just so vanilla and watered down that you never get into any meaningful stuff. Whereas the alternative media will dive right into the meat. And that's what people want. But you got to be careful of what the agenda is and whether they have nefarious characters. So we're going to dive into that and how to identify that. But we're also going to talk about cults and how people can easily be swayed to get into cults. And we're going to talk about what a cult is and how that occurs and how that affects the narrative. So this will be a really fun interview, and we'll get into that now with Dark Journalist.
Hi, Daniel. Welcome back to the program.
Sarah, it's great to be back.
I love talking to you. So this will be a great talk, and we're going to take a deep dive into the alternative media and the things that are going on in the alternative media, because there's a lot. The alternative media has grown and populated at a point where it really is eclipsing the mass media. And now you're seeing the mass media really fighting back. They're not changing their format, which is how you really should fight in business. You should change your format and figure out how to be more competitive. But what you're seeing is nefarious activities behind the scene and different ways to take down your competition. Can you talk about this and maybe expand on some of the reasons why this is happening?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great question. The mainstream media is fascinating to observe because, you know, it covers the different attitudes, whether it's conservative, you know, Fox News or MSNBC and the really hardcore liberal stuff. And they pander to their audiences. But I think now they're at a break point where what happens is they're doing stories and running stories without facts of any kind. You know, I think we saw a lot of that in the last election. And it seems like Trump was the catalyst for a lot of this because their desire to pull down Trump was so dramatic, I would say, that it eclipsed any sense of balance about the facts that they were reporting. Mm-hmm. They just could not figure out how to take this guy down. And there's no question the media was all hands on deck, with very few exceptions, to take Trump down. And whatever camp somebody is in, Democrat or Republican, or if they liked another candidate, I think, you know, we can still observe the fact that it's wrong for the media to kind of control our voting process. And there's no question that that's exactly what they did. You know, not only did they rig polls during the election, but they also they came out with so many narratives that were pro-Hillary and anti-Trump that I think a lot of the schism that was going on in the media was really about, as far as getting at the truth, was about their political preference and didn't really have much to do with the issues at hand or how the voters felt. And the voters just, you know, they just did their thing, and this is how they saw it. So, you know, I think when we get into this question, we have to say the media ordinarily would have an obligation to give you the facts and let you work it out. And in the last election, they were really trying to tell us what to do. And as soon as it was over, they started coming out with memes like fake news and things that were aimed at the alternative media, because they realized, oh my God, the alternative media has grown up and a lot of the narratives are coming, getting through.
So do you think that this election was a turning point for all the alternative media?
Like, there's no question. I mean, you know, I've been doing this 5 years. You're in the alternative media, and I've had corporate tech magazine background for a decade before that. So I've watched these trends very closely. And by the time I started doing the kind of journalism that I do now, which is dark journalism, which is why I call it darkjournalist.com, you know, the idea is that there are places that the mainstream media won't get into. And so you're going to need to go into those dark places to get illumination about what is going on, you know, and to kind of bring some light to these situations. I do think that the real problem that we're looking at in alternative media is, on one hand, it's under attack by the mainstream media, calling it fake news and bringing this, you know, we have to take down our competitors. And so, you know, Alex Jones, I suppose, would be their main target because he was so pro-Trump during the election, has a very large audience. And whatever one would think of Alex Jones, the kind of target practice, I would say, that they have on him is ridiculous, you know. And on the other side of the coin, I think when we look at how the media generally just doesn't give people the facts, there's always a place for the alternative media to cut through and come up with the facts. But it doesn't always do that either. So we're really looking at a complicated situation where, you know, it's not so much that the alternative media needs an umbrella organization, you know, but it needs an umbrella of kind of basic methods, basic kind of rules, in a sense, so that things that come out that are in alternative media can be trusted, have links, have evidence, and, you know, that we can really trust the kind of things that come up. And, you know, my greatest example always is the Pope has an evil twin. You know, this is what you'll see in your Facebook feed. I mean, it's fun, you know, you click on it, but it ain't real. So, you know, that's how the media gets this fake news thing going. On the other hand, you know, there's incredible research around areas like GMOs, like vaccines, et cetera, which they would also call fake news around chemtrails, but it's not. And so you can see that using fake news as a label for these different things in alternative media is really a method by the mainstream media to take it down, to take their competition out.
Well, we almost need an open source media, you know, like a certain set of procedures and protocols that people use that say, you're being a journalist and you're doing this stuff versus you're just putting out your opinion and random stuff. And it that way it can be, you're a respected journalist. You're not in the mainstream, but you're following protocols that are professional and that we know we can trust.
Yeah, absolutely. I think David Seaman was a very interesting example in all this, because David Seaman took a lot of heat for coming out and asking questions, I think first about Hillary's health during the election, and then questions around what came to be known as Pizzagate, which there were all kinds of overlays on it. But the main story about what came out through WikiLeaks about Podesta's emails and references to pizza as a kind of a shorthand for human trafficking, I don't think that there was evidence that they were doing that, but I think it was worth looking at. And, you know, certainly we know there's stories of human trafficking in political circles, and there was something very unusual about the things that he dug up. and that were came out of the Podesta emails. So they had a factual basis of analysis, and there was research to be done there. There was a gigantic hubbub around it, and certainly there was a lot of covering up going on about it. But I think Seaman was interesting because he had worked in mainstream media. He understood media rules, in a sense, being a contributor for Huffington Post. He had some of that. So when he encountered a lot of opposition one way or another, you know, he took the heat for a while doing his stories. But he's an interesting case because he's kind of a breakthrough figure somewhere between mainstream and alternative. And this is what one of the things I try to do in the work, you know, when we look at issues, the very complex issues, whether it's manipulation around the financial system, or you know, advanced technology, some of the things that I look at, I'll look at issues related to UFOs and the deep state and breakaway civilizations and things along this line. You have to go into it, you know, the alternative media, when people go into it, the great advantage that it has is that it's not in the box of the mainstream media, which can't talk about these things. But the disadvantage, and I like to point this out, is that when you get into this situation, anybody can say anything. Mm-hmm. And we encounter a lot of problems with that. And I think, you know, in this era where the technology is caught up to such a point where a meme can be proliferated and go viral that may not be true, there has to be some way to say, you know, the alternative media has accountability because it's a trusted source, instead of, you know, I was talking about financial sites, for example. How many times are we going to hear that the crash is coming, and, you know, that getting used as kind of a financial draw for people to get some financial book, or, you know, it's too much. So there's a lot of manipulation in these different spaces. And I know you've done some great reports on Bitcoin, and it's the same thing there. We see a lot of this almost kind of I want to call it cult like devotion to different types of philosophies that come out.
Well, my book, which is the first inventor of blockchain, Kels Wilson, Dr. Kels Wilson, he's an amazing person. 5 degrees, 2 PhDs. But what we're finding is that the people that hear this, because they're so tied to the original story with Satoshi Nakamoto and this anonymous group creating blockchain, that when they hear something that's different, they just want to lash out. And it's not saying that they didn't come up with it too. It's just he conceived of it and patented it 6 months previous. And he did, and he should get credit for it. He's an inventor, and it's just that's how the world should work, yeah. Right? But the cult behavior behind it and the lashing out of somebody coming up with something that isn't what they're expecting is different than I wasn't expecting that kind of lashing behavior. You know, I just, for something that seems just straightforward and simple, you know, we should all want Absolutely. Somebody to get credit for something.
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting. Yeah.
Well, you and I see that the same way. I always go back to the story of, you know, there's incredible research done around the fact that Abraham Lincoln's assassin got away, actually. And that Wilkes Booth, the person that they had, was the person who was with him. And the real guy got away and died 20 years later and actually confessed that to people. There's fantastic research done around this topic. And there's incredible camps, you know, around this subject. It's a historical topic and nobody knows exactly what happened, but the research is pointing towards the fact that Booth got away. You know, there is a lot of volatility between those groups, the ones who believe in the real thing and the ones who believe that Booth got away, and, you know, they accuse each other of different things and you see all the rest of it. But, you know, they're kind of like their disagreements are still within a certain window, you know. And I've seen this in my research around topics like the JFK assassination. There are groups who don't believe the government story about the JFK assassination, but they also, when they look into the alternative theories about it, whether it was the military-industrial complex or, you know, the mafia or these different factions, the CIA, you know, there are groups who would spar with each other over that. They all agree on the fact that there was a different thing going on, but then they're sparring over this other little piece of information. And so we see that groups and information get divided when it's independent research. So it's outside of the, you know, kind of umbrella of a mainstream academic environment. So those things do happen, but I do think that they're also exploited by groups that don't like the truth coming out about these types of things, whether you're talking about the kind of deep events that we go into.
Well, Pizzagate's a great example because that one's a perfect one to throw that out into the alternative media. And then they can bring up the facts behind it to make everybody look dumb who mm-hmm. is involved in it. But, you know, I put out some reports saying this is Pizzagate type activities. These mm-hmm. things cause Pizzagate type activities, which is 100% true. Mm-hmm. I've had FBI people on my show. I've had other people. We know those kind of activities happen. It's mm-hmm. just that Pizzagate story was probably not true, but those types of things are happening. And that is what people need to understand. And that's a great way for them to get people off track and make everybody look dumb.
Absolutely. It is, because it creates, when I started doing with Dark Journalist, when I first started out, I created what I observed as a pattern in mainstream media. Is basically when a deep event would happen, something like the financial crash of 2008 or 9/11, something like along this line, something truly major, you'd see three patterns come out. One of the patterns was the regular official story. You know, there were 19 hijackers and they flew planes into buildings and this is what we got as a result. Then there was the kind of researchers independent. Some of them could be professors, authors. They would get together and they would look at the official story and say there are holes in it. You know, I always cite Professor Scott in this because he coined the term the deep state and deep politics. And, you know, I think his work is the best fundamental kind of antidote for the government narratives around these types of issues. And in his case, you know, what we would see is people like him would get together and they would form a whole research body that would poke holes in the government story. And that was often called conspiracy theory. You know, and we know those terms were made up by the CIA and others to kind of give this a bad name. But really what it was alternative research. And then what would happen was the third level that would come in, which I call third force stories, and junk conspiracy. So, you know, they'd say, well, some superpowered group made the buildings vanish, voila. Or, you know, in the case of the 2008 thing, well, they took all the money that was missing from the treasury and they built it all for FEMA camps and everybody's going to die. Here are all the coffins. All right. So this is third force stuff to make the legitimate research into the inconsistencies look foolish. So those are junk conspiracies. And it starts all the way back with the Kennedy assassination if you really research it, because Kennedy assassination is a great template for what happens in alternative media. And I recommend everyone study it. Because you see all the forces trying to control the story, and it, although it happened 50 years ago, all the patterns remain in the media from how to cover the things up. But one of the patterns that was there was when they were getting very deep into the fact that there was not a single assassin in that case, and there was evidence of multiple assassins in the Kennedy assassination. Real good evidence, too. I mean, excellent, rock-solid stuff. This weird thing came out, and it was a meme that came out of left field, and it was the driver did it. And there was all these things about it. You know, there was a video of the driver turning around and, like, doing this.
Well, I recently saw that Jackie did it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
No, I saw Jackie did it.
So you get the idea. And so I think what's important about this is, what does that do, really, in your mind, in my mind? I think for an average person, it says, makes them think, oh, you know, I'll just stick with the official story because this is ridiculous. And this is a very important thing. A junk conspiracy can really sort of muddy the waters or even poison the well around legitimate conspiracy research.
Don't you think that some of the legitimate stuff seems so weird and off the wall that the junk, it's easy to really get people, you know, you throw in some junk stuff that seems weird and off the wall and then that just fits in. You know, because a lot of times real life is weird.
It is. It is. But I think it takes advantage of the fact, you know, like, mm-hmm. in other words, a junk conspiracy could be an organic thing that came up that somebody comes up with. But more often than not, I actually believe that it is intelligence related in this sense, in that there are groups that, just as a way to take down research of avenues that are going close to the type of work that they're doing, they will control the narrative by just letting something crazy out there and letting that gain traction so that everybody associated with it looks ridiculous, like we've been talking about. I think the way to avoid the junk conspiracies is to, you know, see work like Professor Scott's work as a real alternative body of work with evidence that relates to documents, has a document trail and things that you can actually go to, versus some wild story that comes out of left field. I think if we can start to separate that in alternative media, we have a much better shot of avoiding the junk conspiracy.
And also, if the mainstream media doesn't have it, we hold them to the same standards.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And that's what we're not doing. The mainstream media has not been held to the high standards that they should be held to. And that's why we're being taken for a ride on a lot of things.
Well, it's an interesting situation because the mainstream media has a lot of pressure on it. First of all, people think it's like a public utility or something. I mean, it's not, you know. Mm-hmm. Ford runs
that's
commercials.
A good point.
Pharmaceutical companies run commercials. They need to work with their sponsors. And if their sponsors, you know, if you have run a news story that says, well, pharmaceuticals are bad and cause cancer and there's a program to push them excessively on the human public, those guys are going to bail out and go to your competitor and mm-hmm. your revenue is going to shrink. So we have to be aware of that. You know, there's a woman, fantastic reporter, CBS reporter, who really lost her job and works independently now, named Cheryl Atkison, if you've seen any of her reports. But she did a TED Talk on astroturfing, which I think is exactly what we see in alternative communities. I think she was talking about it in relation to mainstream media. But astroturfing is where, you know, a higher order, let's say a pharmaceutical company, will create a program to make it look like regular people are going into, you know, let's say there's a whole kind of a group that deals with this fact that, you know, pharmaceutical companies are pushing these meds on us and, you know, they're being pushed by doctors, et cetera, and they're highly addictive. And so they're talking about that, and they'll infiltrate those groups with people who are straight from the companies and making it seem like they're average people. Like, you know, don't you think you're taking it too far? Or let's take a look at this from a different angle. Maybe the drugs are good for you. And doing these types of things. And the astroturfing is actually paid for by like AstraZeneca and companies like that. And, you know, we see this in politics all the time where these little groups spring up and they look like they're independent. You know, I think that there was a lot of support around Jill Stein's initiative. She raised all this money to challenge Trump, if you remember. That's kind of a bit of astroturfing there by Democratic forces to kind of use this Green Party. So we have to be aware of that type of astroturfing because what it means basically is they're coming in and pretending it's organic when in fact what we're seeing is, you know, it's a paid for operation by a major company. And I think that that's crucial.
Well, and there's
a
lot of
term I think we should be using. Yeah.
There's a lot of facts that shows that the tobacco industry did that, right? I mean, it's very well documented. But in 20 years ago, 15 years ago, I was in the granite world selling, you know, importing granite and manufacturing different things and marble and all sorts of exotic materials. And one thing that happened is the man-made products, you know, the Cambria and the Silestone of the world, put together this board that came out with facts saying that granite puts out radon. And it's, I don't know if you remember this.
Oh,
there
yes.
There was this huge campaign about radon. And I was like, what the heck? And I looked into it and it was being funded by those companies. So
wow.
That's a great example of, you know, that's what corporations do all the time. So you have to be careful of where it's coming from. But the tobacco industry, you can attack them and nobody gets mad because everybody, because it's so well documented now. But other companies are doing this too.
Well, it is. No question about it. The astroturfing idea is just to give us perspective on what it is that actually goes down in a business environment. So, you know, when I was doing the Apple Tech magazine, there were tons of companies who were putting out stories about that were basically kind of, you know, tamping down the notion that Wi-Fi was bad for you. And they had studies that were paid for, and they were paying for the studies, and it was showing, hey, everything's hunky-dory, because their entire business model depended on the fact that Wi-Fi was healthy, because if it wasn't, their entire plan fell apart. Now, we saw that with, you know, Monsanto, when they had this company doing research, and the company found out that a lot of the bee colony collapse that was happening was due to the fact of interference, basically, by these GMOs. And so Monsanto's solution was to buy the company. And they bought the company outright, changed the study, and that's what you get. So there is a lot of that, and I think we do have to be aware of it. But not to say that, you know, you don't trust anything that a company does, or that they're out to get you or something like that. It's just to keep them honest in that sense, you know, to keep that kind of public level accountable. And I think that that's a reasonable approach. And it's something where, you know, very often we see companies don't like that, because there are things in products that they push, like pharmaceuticals, which really have a lot of long-term harmful effects. And we've seen court cases over and over again where, you know, they use a lot of intimidation tactics on doctors to prevent that information from coming out. And so these are the kinds of stories, I think, that are really important, because we get a better level of transparency on any issue if we can kind of get to the core a little bit, you know, a little bit more, and realize, well, there's a lot of astroturfing going on. There's a lot of, like, major corporations trying to make you think that things are okay. You know, like 46 to 52 vaccinations as opposed to, you know, what it used to be, 6, I think, 20 years ago.
Yeah,
it's excessive, and it's a profit model. I don't think that that's really for health purposes.
Yeah, it's pretty. And they haven't done any testings on multiple vaccines being done at once. And that's where they're thinking a lot of the issues are coming from.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing that you pointed out is to not throw away what big companies and what the establishment is doing. It's a mistake to, and I like that you pointed that out, it's a mistake to think that everything that's part of the establishment is bad, because that's not true either. It's just for us to try to bring transparency. And I think that our social institutions are changing, and we're starting, it's a good thing, we're starting to have a lot of pushback. But one thing I see in the alternative media is that if you ever bring in mainstream, or if you bring in something that's more, like, I just had a huge pushback on universities, like going to college. Like, going to college is all bad because all they do is indoctrinate you. Like, well, you got to learn from somebody. And if you have, if you're going to go have brain surgery, what do you, where are you going to go? You got a bullet lodge in your brain. Okay, well, you might go to Africa, but make sure you pay off the local, you know, mob so they don't raid you when you're, I mean, it's just silly. And if, and if you don't believe in universities, well, then you got to make sure when you're learning online that you're not learning from a person that went to university anyways.
You're right, you know, right. I mean, sure. Well, this is the, you know, I'm against everything kind of personality attitude. Everything is a scam, you know. Education's a scam. Well, it's not. It's what you do with the education, I think, that counts. But we do see that, you know, and comment boards are very much like that. I think that people don't really think through. Of course, I have to say that on your videos, my videos, and some other sites that I really enjoy, there are sometimes essays in there that are perfect, you know, and
they're
so insightful. And I'm really impressed by the level of the audience that I have with Dark Journalists and that you have with this show. You know, and so when I point this part out, I just want to say that there are, and it's throughout the internet, there's a kind of a syndrome, I think, which is if somebody feels like lashing out, they're going to resort to a comment board and a message board. And we see this, and I think that, you know, it goes against the civility of getting to the point of things. And frankly, I don't have a whole lot of patience for it. I take the point of view of Anne Rice, who's one of my favorite authors. She does some really great work. But she's been around for a long time. When she was looking at Amazon reviews, and she said, you know, comment boards and message boards are becoming the public urinals of the 21st century. And I think that there is some truth to that, which is, you know, we really have to make a greater effort to keep the conversation civil. You were talking about the political conversation. My God, you know, you go on a Trump message board, or, you know, when you look at people talking about Trump and they just allow themselves to say anything. And I think it's true in reverse with enemies of Hillary or whoever it happens to be, Bernie Sanders. It goes too far. And we can get to the point, we can make our points in a civil fashion. And that's when I think people are really going to listen. At a certain point, if everything's just all rage, you know, people are going to tune out, and rightfully so.
Well, where is that line in the comments of saying, okay, I don't want this in my show's comments, versus, you know, it's good to have somebody who thinks differently and says, you know what, I don't agree with this and this is why, versus somebody that's telling me I'm a complete moron and you're an idiot and you're stupid. Well,
you just sized it up right there, right? Yeah. No, there is a definite line. And actually, inspired disagreements, debates, and all that stimulates all kinds of great ideas.
Yeah, those are great.
Yeah, that's what you want, actually. You want a thriving community of people exchanging ideas, and you don't want them all to be kind of vanilla. You know, that would be ridiculous. But I do think that this is a very small contingent of people online that we're talking about here. And it is their thing to, you know, make somebody's day a little harder because maybe they're not happy themselves. And we do see that a lot. But I think by and large, this idea of having a civil tone when going into alternative areas, sometimes I get the impression that, you know, somebody looking in an independent media area gives them the ability to say anything. You know, I've seen that too. And it doesn't. I mean, independent media is still about getting facts for things. My whole kind of attraction to it is the fact that you can get real answers. And that's what we're looking for. We need that kind of, you know, reality versus the official story. You know, I don't want to get caught up in the official story, which has all these different forces manipulating it. I think that we have a lot more sort of people IQ if we can share our impressions and work with the kind of evidence that's available that the mainstream doesn't look at.
Well, and I think it was good that you pointed out that they have so many forces that keep them away from being able to, you know, cover the kind of stories that they want to cover, and that we don't have those forces. We have a little bit, but not anywhere near what the mainstream has. So we have that freedom to cover. Now, where is the line when, like, you just did a report on a group of people that are doing something that isn't truthful. So where is the line when people are making stuff up that you should really call yourself entertainment versus calling yourself something truth? Because now it's a mass fraud on an unsuspecting amount of people that believe you, and
absolutely,
it hurts them.
Yeah. Well, I'm doing a series called New Age Deep State, and the setup for the series, and it's available on YouTube or at darkjournalist.com. What you could get from it is that the New Age movement, I think, is a very important movement, especially in America, but all around the world, because its roots have very rich traditions of alchemy, esoteric truths, and great history, really. So the Theosophical Society, Anthroposophy, things along this line brought incredible things here to America. Cremation, the practice of meditation, yoga, this all came from this great merging of this Theosophical tradition with all of their kind of attraction to India and Indian spirituality. But I think the esoteric groups that came out of that, there was a lot of bickering back then too, and there were splinter groups and all the rest of it. But what we saw is that it was a great response really to the scientific materialism that we were witnessing in the 19th century, where everything was like, you know, could be boiled down just to matter and there is no spirit and all that. So this was a great response to it. And I think it really worked because it got people thinking on a much higher level. And it blossomed in the 60s again with a big, you know, like yoga was an explosion, psychic experience, reincarnation we're really getting into a whole different level of understanding, you know, life after death. These things were just becoming in the mainstream. And they're very important, I think. But I think what was happening by then, the 60s and 70s, is that there were groups looking at the New Age movement and saying, we can exploit that because these are open-minded people going in. And so I think there were operations really from a marketing side that were just coming in and running these operations on one side. And then on the other side, with things that relate to advanced technology, you'd see government intelligence agencies, and there's a good track record of evidence for this, would interfere with a number of different cases, would interfere with researchers. It was a pretty big secret, whatever it was that was going on. And of course, you know, I've done a number of shows on UFOs. I have my own ideas about it, but certainly I think anyone looking at the topic can say, you know, there's enough evidence there to let us know there's something incredible going on that's relating to a higher technology, whether it's coming from an off-world civilization or if it's something here that is a breakaway civilization that has advanced technology. Somebody's using really advanced stuff, and it doesn't have anything to do with, you know, our kind of commercial aircraft. So I think, to bring the point around, it between this infiltration on one side of intelligence stuff and then on the other side of marketing, excessive marketing, and these forces creeping in, I think the New Age has been exploited a lot. And so the name of the series, New Age Deep State, relates to that because I work so much around the deep state. But what happens when the deep state stuff, which we look at as the large kind of political conspiracies, what happens when things like that creep into your backyard of the New Age communities? You know, you have to be able to get some perspective on it. And in this case, it was a group that centers around Corey Good, who calls himself a time-traveling astronaut. And what I did so far with the series is just show in like factual reports where there are links available and evidence and whistleblowers that there are a number of inconsistencies around the things that have grown up as a kind of cult atmosphere around him and what he calls blue avians, which are supposed to be like a savior aliens, and he's their messenger and that kind of a thing. You know, there are lots of wild stories and alternative narratives, and in the UFO community, you do see that a lot. But I think there's a rich history in UFO communities, like Professor John Mack from Harvard and Dr. David Jacobs. And these are people who take the subject seriously, work with people who have experienced symptoms of alien abduction and things along that line. And there's a whole kind of process where they've kind of given evidence, you know, this person went through 6 years of hypnotic regression. This is what we got. You know, this person had missing time. This person experienced this and that. We have videotapes of this and that. In Corey Good's case, he came up as a whistleblower and he showed up on Gaia TV with David Wilcock, and they did a show called, I'm going to lose the name of the show. What is it? Cosmic Disclosure. That's it. And, cause it's now Comic Disclosure because they're doing a comic book. But anyway, the series wasn't about Corey Good so much as he was kind of a very good example in this sense, and that he and his business partner, Roger Ramsar, were creating a Full Disclosure Now network, a three-year disclosure, and there were all these marketing angles around it. You know, like Corey's Kids was one marketing angle where they would go in and they would have gear stores for things like, you know, get your secret space gear and comic books and video games. And it was really... it was kind of exploiting the themes that had been developed by diligent researchers over a long period of time. And this guy came out of the blue doing this. And then, you know, his business partner suddenly shows up in the UFO community last year and he's taking over and consolidating these things. And so for me, you know, this was a classic example of a New Age Deep State event happening. And that's what I've been covering on it. And their response largely, has been not to address the concerns, but to threaten legal this or to call me, you know, Illuminati shill or something like that. You know?
They're accusing you of Illuminati with no proof, by the way. They're just accusing you and throwing it out there at you.
Oh, no. I mean, well, Corey Good worked for the Dallas Federal Reserve. You know, if you look for me, I worked for an Apple magazine. I mean, there's a big difference, you know, if you go back. If you want to talk Illuminati, I mean, look in your past. But I think... we take a guy like Good. Okay, his story is he's part of this program. He's going into space. He's going to Mars. He's dealing with a space alliance. He's dealing with blue avian aliens. There's no evidence for any of it.
None.
Anywhere. And even he will admit that. So what do you do with a story like that? And you start to track it as a movement. You say, here's a group that formed around it. I think, you know, you have to stop and say at a certain point, you know, the kind of marketing push around it is exactly what you're saying, which is it's more about entertainment. It's getting into comic books and things like that. And if you took it as somebody's experience, even if you said it was my, you know, someone's psychic experience, okay. But to, you know, on the show, if they show up and he comes back and he's like, you know, I just came back from Mars and boy, are my legs tired, you know. So I think there are these things that creep into the alternative space, and it's good not to just focus solely on them and say that it's their fault and they're ruining the space or something. But I think maybe to look at it and say, well, this is an example of kind of like the junk conspiracy aspect that I talk about, because UFOs are real. I think we've proven that since 1947.
And UFOs meaning unidentified flying objects, not just alien. I mean, it's just we don't know what they are, correct? That's
no,
what that word
I don't,
means.
I don't think we know. I don't think we know what they are. But certainly, you know, when you get thousands and thousands of sightings, it's kind of important to, you know, let's put it where it is. You know, something is happening there that relates to advanced technology. So, you know, I think we can go in and say, you know, what can we prove? What have you got to prove? And that's what's always been good, I think, and intelligent about the field. You can go into other areas, and there's the same types of memes that get generated. For example, if we go into finance, there's always the stories coming out about the White Dragon family and how the White Dragon family is going to save everybody, and or the Iraqi dinar, you know, like you've got to invest this way, and you know, the dollar's crashing and you have to buy gold now. We've got the best rate. And, you know, they're rolling it into these things. But it is also kind of like coming from a journalistic space. You know, it's being leaked in that way. And so you have to say, well, what's the manipulation in these spaces? You know, if you go into legitimate research around chemtrails or GMOs, there's always something around it, which is a kind of a disinformation layer, or it's somebody taking it too far. You know, let's suppose it's not even a particular agency going into it. So we do have to look, I think, a little hard when we get into alternative memes and who's driving them. But certainly the meme around extraterrestrials as saviors and that kind of a thing is something that we do see pop up every once in a while, and we do see cults forming around it, you know.
So
and
why are people vulnerable to this cult type thing where they really want to be part of something like that? Because I, you know, you see it in a lot of different areas, like what I talked about with the Bitcoin, about changing the narrative of maybe who came up with it first, and it gets so much anger, whether they just won't look at the proof. Where does this cult like, I may throw you on the spot here, but people are vulnerable to that.
No, I this is exactly the question, which is, you know, somebody might be looking for a particular answer and on the way to getting it. And we've seen this, you know, I go back to Rajneesh, which was a huge fiasco, which happened in Oregon. And this is 80s and 90s. And there was a gigantic cult there. But what he was doing in large part was bilking his followers and creating these gigantic compounds and buying arms and all this kind of stuff. So, you know, any person who studied a cult network will show you that, you know, these things spring up and people want to be a part of it. Now, not all cults are bad. You know, certainly there can be groups that get together and go along a particular track. And I think we've seen that, you know, many people would say, different things around nature religions or cults, you know. I mean, so the word cult is not meant as a slight here, but once you get into more cultish behavior, then I think you have to take it out of the realm of just, you know, on one hand, you've got evidence-based research around a particular thing, you know.
Would you say cult is when you cross a line between just being a normal person who really is interested and passionate about something you cross the line to almost cult behavior when no amount of reason will allow the person to think differently about a topic, or they become very violent when they hear, you know, even if it's violent being angry, when they hear anything that contradicts what they think.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And we've seen this around cults, and it's very strange when it's around New Age cults, because very often they're about love and light, and you know, it's very odd when they're like, if you disagree with our great leader, then, you know, you're out of this group. Do you understand? You know, and so, I mean, the whole thing is about, these are research communities, you know, they're not worship communities. That's a religion, you know, so there's a huge difference. So once it gets onto that level, I think it has to be looked at in a totally different way than, say, you know, somebody's story about getting involved, you know, having a major spiritual experience, or you know, having a UFO experience or something along that line. I think the public can get a great deal from that, but somebody utilizing it as a cult is very dangerous. And so in the series, there's actually a number of different things that I'm looking at. You know, and my own point about it is really, it's not any particular person and not any particular group or movement. It is a kind of pattern that is repeatable, and we've seen it happen over and over again, which is the space around a particular thing that, you know, like the New Age, that deals with the person's spirituality, that deals with beliefs, which it's in places that it's hard to get independent data on. You know, political conspiracies certainly fall into this category too, and we do see different cults of personality around these topics. You know, let's be honest, when you look at communities like 9/11 truther communities and things like that, you know, they all have those schisms too. So we do see it. I just think that it's exploited, I would say, and it's easier, you know, to exploit something like that because they're being open and there isn't a lot of great material available in the mainstream about it.
So why do you think... You know, with the mainstream being really attacked, I mean, they are. I mean, we're not necessarily attacking them, but their business model is being attacked because they are losing business. They're losing revenue and they're losing part of the market share is the word I'm looking for. Why do you think that they are not moving into a different way of conducting business to stay relevant versus staying with that old tried and true mainstream type way of trying to do things? You know, because you look at something like RT, and RT is saying, okay, I'm going to take on this alternative media way of doing business and do this. They're kind of like a hybrid, you know?
They are.
And they figured out how to create a niche and make it work. Alex Jones is moving in that direction, and he's making it work. He's a little different, but the mainstream just haven't, you know, gotten there.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's kind of fascinating. Alternative media, I'd say, something like RT would be an excellent version of how you can, if you have the right resources and you have the right sort of open mind about the topics as you go into them, you know, you're willing to discuss GMOs because you're not at the mercy of a GMO company like Monsanto saying, we'll pull our commercials if you do that. Or you're willing to talk about the military-industrial complex and the excessive militarism and budget around it, because you don't have Boeing as a you know, major advertiser. It's important. I always make this example, and I want people always to catch it, which is during Meet the Press, they always run a Boeing commercial about a guy walking around, and it's a tank. And, you know, I always think to myself, or a bazooka. And I'm like, you know, the public's not going to buy a tank or a bazooka. What is this person doing here? And I literally think it's their way of kind of saying, you know, supporting. We're giving you the money. Don't give us a hard time when we bomb Syria or something. And I that's how it looks. And I think if we look at people like Amber Lyon, who came out of CNN, when she looks at things like this, when she was inside CNN and she found that they were taking payoffs and running what were basically commercials for different repressive regimes in the Middle East. And, you know, so this is the kind of thing I think that we have to be aware of when we deal with the media, that there is an agenda there. It's not a public utility. And we have to take what they say with extreme caution and I think filter quite a bit of it out.
Well, I think the public is is slowly starting to realize that it isn't a public utility. It really is a business who has people that they answer to. You know, there are people that are doing the advertising, whether it's the government giving them money, whether it's the pharmaceuticals, whoever their advertisers are, they're trying to please them. And it is what it is. Now, do you think they're going to have to, they're not going to be able to turn their meme and turn their business model around without failing? I mean, are they just going to fall flat?
Well, they're trying. Their attempts, the first thing what they're trying to do is put the genie back in the bottle. You know, at the beginning of the year, we did see this incredible list that came out of nowhere through the Washington Post.
Weird
by a company.
That?
Yeah, and that was a cutout company, too, that had just been created out of the blue, Propernod. And it was trying to say the Kremlin not only has an influence on Trump, but it also has an influence on alternative media. And this was one of the worst. I mean, that's like McCarthyism or something. You know, here's your enemies list. And, you know.
It was incredible.
It was like the Red Scare all over again.
It was incredible. It just didn't work. Yeah. I know, but it just didn't work that well because they didn't have enough of a hold on the
No. And also, I'll tell you, if you look at that list of sites that came out on there, it was fascinating because there were, in fact, you know, UFO sites on it. There were sites with small traffic on it, but Zero Hedge was on that, and we know Zero Hedge is anything but a Russian mouthpiece, so it was kind of bizarre for them and how they did this. But I think the idea was Bezos, Amazon's founder, who just took over Whole Foods, by the way, he took over the Washington Post, and he wanted to carry on this tradition. The Washington Post is known widely as a CIA mouthpiece. And Catherine Graham, who owned it, is acknowledged CIA asset. So they have a great relationship there. And I really think that there were people inside of these intelligence agencies that were just looking at this and saying, we have to link Trump to Russia. And we also need to get rid of those things in alternative media that are, you know, kind of getting in our way of doing that, because there's a lot of prestige and a lot of money at stake. And I think what happened was they came up with this thing of like, you know, if you believe in these alternative things, then you are, you know, you're Rusky. Basically, it was that simple.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
And, it was embarrassing. And it was one of the low moments, I think, along with the fact of seeing these kind of CIA people who really never go on camera coming out and saying, you know, well, Trump may have colluded with Russians, you know, like leaking little ideas like that without any evidence. So we see it on the high level. This is, you know, this is our thing, which is microcosm, macrocosm. We're going high, low all the time. There's this high level Trump, the DNC, the CIA, and the media, mainstream media. And then if you look at the reflection of that in the alternative media, we have our own kind of version of the same thing, slightly inverted. And we're looking at them, you know, and they're basically hoping to ignore us or get rid of us. So, you know, you mentioned somebody like Alex Jones. Well, it's fascinating because suddenly people like Colbert and, you know, Megyn Kelly and all that, they're determined to kind of pen in a lot of the reporting that he does. And I'm not saying that he gets everything right by a long shot, but I do feel that he's become their main target because they realize that he helped Trump get into the White House basically by keeping the pressure of transparency on the Clinton campaign.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that is what happened. Well, what, with your advice, what can alternative media personalities and people do that are working really hard in this space stay alive? How can they stay alive and stay credible? What can they do with this, all these attacks going on? And then I want to move into what can the average person do to support these people?
That's a great point. There's a great value in alternative media because they don't have the restrictions. At the same time, they don't have the resources of the mainstream media. The mainstream media has incredible resources to bring to bear on any situation, legal, you know, especially, you know, in terms of the kind of insight that they can draw upon, in terms of the people on the ground they can go to get to investigate things. So there's a gigantic advantage in mainstream media. The advantage that we have in alternative media is that we're willing to go outside the box and look at the real story if it's outside of the official narrative. So I would think the more credible approach that's taken when it comes to that, which is our real advantage over the mainstream media, if we back up what we do with sources, if we back up what we do with evidence, you know, we certainly are in a better position to kind of survive against the attacks by the mainstream media saying the alternative media is fake news. See ya. You know, there's always been a kind of alternative media, whether it was talk radio or if you go back and listen to Mae Brussel in 1978. Okay, her, and you can find her recordings on the internet. And she's talking about, you know, Bilderberg and cell phone towers and stuff back then. So this is 40 years of tradition here of people looking deeply. And she did incredible work. So there is a tradition here of people getting to facts and giving us that information. And what happens is the mainstream does pick up on things that are proven by the alternative media, and it moves the culture. It gets integrated. They find a way to integrate it. You know, this is, I think, the kind of effect that the alternative media should have. If people in alternative media don't have all their facts lined up or, you know, throw stories out there that aren't true, then I think they should own up to it and really come from a more fact-based perspective. And I think there are groups, you know, I see such quality out there and I relate to them. You know, and certainly your show is one of the main ones.
Well, so what can the average person do to support the media? You know, people like us and people who are out there working their buns off, with not much support. You know, what can people do?
Well, there are great sites out there. I mean, I think we, to get information, Solari.com is Catherine Austin Fitz's site, Giza Death Star, Joseph Farrell. These are places where the information, you know, we're trying to present information and without the filter of mainstream media and where people can really get answers. I mean, Zero Hedge, I would put in there, your show, Dark Journalist, you know, Forbidden Knowledge TV, .net, ForbiddenKnowledgeTV.net. I want you .com. I have no idea what that is, but that's Alexandra Bruce, and she does an amazing job as well. Of really, you know, she's an incredible mind and does incredible essays. So you know, that's the kind of caliber that you want, and I think that people will pay for that because it makes a difference in their lives and in their families' lives. This is the kind of thing we want. We want to be able to kind of look at these deep issues that aren't covered in the mainstream, but to do it from an evidence-based perspective, or at least to have some kind of protocols around how we gather information. And I think the way that when people identify sites that do that, and I'm sure there's many more than the ones I just listed there, but I think they should support them, subscribe to them, send them feedback, tell people about them, spread the word in social media about them, and really help, you know, basically, pay into what you think is good, you know, things that are helpful to you and helpful to other people. And they do grow. It's amazing. I mean, in my own case, doing the things that I was drawn to with Dark Journalist, as I've been working on it over 5 years, and we have, you know, thousands of subscribers and the best guests and the best viewers. I mean, so I'm very happy with the direction that we're going in.
Good job. Well, thank you so much for joining me again today. You're always so insightful. And again, it's darkjournalist.com. And yes. I recommend subscribing. It's only like $3 a month, right? Something like that?
Yeah, it's $3.25 a month. And you get audio files, you get exclusive episodes and bonus video. So it is definitely worthwhile and it supports the show. But I do want to say here that I enjoy your show so much because you do such a fantastic job of getting people from these different fields that I think, and that's very important also. You know, some great interviews that you've done with the SpaceX CEO and the anti-aging shows. I mean, these are breakthrough shows, and I want to tell you, you're doing a great job.
Thanks. Well, I try not to shy away from people in the mainstream as well as alternative people. You know, bring everybody together. But thank you so much for supporting that. So have an amazing weekend.
And that's all we have for today. I want to remind you that I have my Patreon account up there and I'm trying to get up to 100 subscribers. $2 a month, that's all it takes, and you get all my ebooks free. And I promise you, you'll get more free than you're putting in. I want to try to get to 100 so I can start doing some exclusive content. And if we get there, then And if we get there, then we'll start seeing a lot more interesting things coming out. So for now, I hope everybody has an amazing day.